This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Podcast of Audio Reading Service volunteers reading the Journal Gazette is provided by the Allen County Public Library for the sight and print impaired and made available with the permission and cooperation of the Journal Gazette.
Thank you for joining us. I'm Jennifer with
Mitch.
For the next 2 hours, we will be reading selections from the Friday, October 3rd, Fort Wayne Journal Gazette, copyright 2025. We'll begin with news for the first hour and then take a short break. When we come back from the break, we'll read obituaries, then a number of features from the Weekender section. After that, we'll read from the perspective section, including letters to the editor and editorials. After editorials, we'll read the TV listings, sports, and birthday announcements. The headlines from the front page of the Friday, October 3rd Journal Gazette are 9 colleges asked to adopt Trump plan. $400,000 to boost electrical training. Israeli strikes kill 57 as Hamas eyes peace deal. Study shows fourfold increase in wildfires since the 1980s. Now here's Mitch with the first article.
$400,000 to boost electrical training. Google investments to create 500 apprentices. By Ashley Slobata of the Journal Gazette. Indiana's electrical worker pipeline is getting a $400,000 boost from Google.org, support that should increase training capacity for about 500 additional apprentices within 5 years, the Electrical Training Alliance announced Thursday. The money will benefit Indiana Joint Apprenticeship and Training Committees managed by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers and National Electrical Contractors Association, including the Fort Wayne Electrical GATC, a news release said. The Electrical Union and Trade Association created the alliance known as ETA. Along with increasing apprentices, the organization will use the money to integrate artificial intelligence tools into its curriculum, the release said. Apprentices will also have access to Google's AI Essential course to sharpen their AI skills. Google.org is Google's philanthropic arm. Its website states it supports teaching, learning, and career readiness through digital skills and access to technology. This investment not only creates family-sustaining career opportunities, but also ensures a strong pipeline of highly skilled electricians prepared to meet the demands of a rapidly changing and growing industry, Ken Cooper, IBEW International President, said. The state's projected pipeline of new electricians is anticipating to increase by 42%, bolstering efforts to address a worker shortage that could constrain the country's ability to build infrastructure needed to support AI, advanced manufacturing, and a shift to clean energy, the release said. Google last year announced plans to invest $2 billion in a data center on Fort Wayne's Far East Side. The long-range plans include up to 9 data centers, buildings on a 892-acre site bordered by Adams Center and Tillman Roads and the railroad corridor near New Haven. Todd Stafford, ETA executive director, described the collaboration between Google and his organization as a major investment in the workforce. But this effort is about more than numbers, he said in a statement. It's about equipping the skilled professionals needed to modernize the grid and make the most out of our existing infrastructure. Google.org is proud to be involved, said Mab Ibrahim, head of economic opportunities for the Americas. Supporting the skilled trades is vital for powering Indiana's future as demand surges for electricians, data centers, and clean energy. Ibrahim said in a statement. The partnership should tremendously boost the Fort Wayne and Indianapolis Joint Apprenticeship and Training Committees, said Samuel Lacher of Trade Association's Central Indiana chapter. He added the benefits will go beyond opening doors for more people to build careers in the electrical trade. Just as important, he said in a statement, the focus on leadership development will ensure younger apprentices advance quickly into leadership roles and be fully prepared to lead large-scale projects in teams with confidence and skill.
Study shows fourfold increase in wildfires since the 1980s by Seth Borenstein of the Associated Press, Dateline, Washington. Earth's nastiest and costliest wildfires are blazing four times more often now than they did in the 1980s because of human-caused climate change and people moving closer to wildlands, a new study found. A study in the journal Science looks at global wildfires not by acres burned, which is the most common measuring stick, but by the harder-to-calculate economic and human damage they cause. The study concluded there has been a, quote, climate-linked escalation of societally disastrous wildfires, end quote. A team of Australian, American and German fire scientists calculated the 200 most damaging fires since 1980 based on the percentage of damage to the country's gross domestic product at the time, taking inflation into account. The frequency of these events has increased about 4.4 times from 1980 to 2023, said study lead author Callum Cunningham, a pyrogeographer at the Fire Center at the University of Tasmania in Australia. It shows beyond a shadow of a doubt that we do have a major wildfire crisis on our hands, Cunningham said. About 43% of the 200 most damaging fires occurred in the last 10 years of the study. In the 1980s, the globe averaged two of these catastrophic fires a year and a few times hit four a year. From 2014 to 2023, the world averaged nearly nine a year, including 13 in 2021. It noted that the count of these devastating infernos sharply increased in 2015, which, quote, coincided with increasingly extreme climatic conditions, end quote. Though the study date ended in 2023, the last 2 years have been even more extreme, Cunningham said. Europe and North America lead in the number of these economically damaging fires. It's especially worse in the Mediterranean around Greece, Italy, Spain, and Portugal, and in the western United States around California because of the climate prone to sudden dryness worsened by global warming, Cunningham said. The researchers also found a tripling in how often a single fire killed at least 10 people, such as 2018's Paradise Fire, 2023's Lahaina Fire, and those in Los Angeles in 2025. Cunningham said often researchers look at how many acres of fire burns as a measuring stick, but he called that flawed because it really doesn't show the effect on people, with area not mattering as much as economics and lives. Hawaii's Lahaina fire wasn't big, but it burned a lot of buildings and killed a lot of people, so it was more meaningful than one in sparsely populated regions, he said. We need to be targeting the fires that matter, and those are the fires that cause major ecological destruction because they're burning too intensely, Cunningham said. But economic data is difficult to get, with many countries keeping that information private, preventing global trends and totals from being calculated. So Cunningham and colleagues were able to get more than 40 years of global economic data from insurance giant Munich Re, and then combine it with the public database from International Disaster Database, which isn't as complete, but is collected by the Catholic University of Louvain in Belgium.
Israeli strikes kill 57 as Hamas eyes peace deal. From the Associated Press, Dateline, Deir al-Balah, Gaza Strip. Israeli strikes and gunfire killed at least 57 Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, health officials said Thursday, as Hamas was still considering its response to U.S. President Donald Trump's proposal for ending the nearly two-year war. The plan requires Hamas to return all 48 hostages, about 20 of them thought by Israel to be alive, give up power and disarm in return for the release of hundreds of Palestinian prisoners and an end to fighting. However, the proposal, which has been accepted by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, sets no path to Palestinian statehood. Palestinians long for the war to end, but many believe the plan favors Israel. And a Hamas official said some elements were unacceptable without elaborating. Qatar and Egypt, two key mediators, said it requires more negotiations on certain elements. At least 29 people were killed in Israeli fire in southern Gaza, according to Nasser Hospital, which received the bodies. Officials there said 14 of them were killed in Israeli military corridor, where there have been frequent shootings around the distribution of humanitarian aid. Officials at Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in the central city of Deir al-Balah said they had received 16 dead from Israeli strikes. In Gaza City, health officials at Shifa Hospital said they received 5 bodies and several wounded people, adding that its staff are having difficulties reaching the hospital as Israel wages a major offensive aimed at occupying the city. Other hospitals reported an additional 7 deaths from Israeli fire. There was no immediate comment from the Israeli military, which says it only strikes militants and accuses Hamas of putting civilians in danger by operating in populated areas. Israel has meanwhile intercepted most of the more than 40 vessels in a widely watched flotilla carrying a symbolic amount of humanitarian aid for Palestinians and aiming to break Israel's 18-year blockade of Gaza, according to the organizers. Israel's foreign ministry said on social media that activists on board, including Greta Thunberg and several European lawmakers, were safe and were being taken to Israel to begin procedures for their deportation. In the occupied West Bank, a Palestinian militant was killed and another arrested on Thursday after they carried out a car ramming and shooting attack on an Israeli army checkpoint, the military said, adding that no soldiers were wounded. A senior Hamas official said the official response will only come after consultations with other Palestinian factions. Speaking on condition of anonymity, the official said Hamas had conveyed its concerns to Qatar and Egypt. The Hamas-led attack on southern Israel on October 7, 2023, that triggered the war, killed some 1,200 people, while 251 others were abducted. Most of the hostages have been freed under previous ceasefire deals. The Trump plan would guarantee the flow of humanitarian aid and promises reconstruction in Gaza, placing its more than 2 million Palestinians under international governance.
9 colleges asked to adopt Trump plan would get easier access to money if they follow agenda. From the Associated Press, Stateline, Washington. The White House is asking 9 major universities to commit to President Donald Trump's political priorities in exchange for more favorable access to federal money. A document sent to the universities encourages them to adopt the White House's vision with commitments to accept the government's priorities on admissions, women's sports, free speech, student discipline, and college affordability, among other topics. Signing on would give universities quote, multiple positive benefits, end quote, including substantial and meaningful federal grants and increased overhead payments where feasible. According to a letter sent to universities alongside the compact, the letter calls it a proactive effort as the administration continues to investigate alleged civil rights violations at U.S. campuses. Called the Compact for Academic Excellence in Higher Education, it asks universities to accept the government's definition of gender and apply it to campus bathrooms, locker rooms, and women's sports teams. It asks colleges to stop considering race, gender, and a wide range of student demographics in the admissions process, and to require undergraduate applicants to take the SAT or ACT. The 10-page proposed agreement was sent Wednesday to some of the most selective public and private universities: Vanderbilt, the University of Pennsylvania, Dartmouth College, the University of Southern California, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, the University of Texas, the University of Arizona, Brown University, and the University of Virginia. It was not clear how these schools were selected or why. The nine universities could become, quote, initial signatories, end quote, and are being invited to provide feedback before the language is finalized, according to the letter. It asks for a decision by November 21st. The memo represents a shift in strategy as the administration offers a reward, not just punishment, as an incentive for adopting Trump's political wish list. Many of the demands mirror those made by his administration as it slashed billions of dollars in federal money for Harvard, Columbia, and others accused of liberal bias. A federal judge overturned cuts at Harvard in September, saying the government had overstepped its authority. Several universities said they were reviewing the compact and had no comment. A statement from the University of Virginia said there was nothing to suggest why it was chosen. The university's interim president assembled a group of administrators on Thursday to review the letter. Leaders of the Texas system were honored that the Austin campus was chosen to be a part of the compact and its potential funding advantages, according to a statement from Kevin Itlife, chair of the Board of Regents. Today, we welcome the new opportunity presented to us, and we look forward to working with the Trump administration on it, Itlife said. California Governor Gavin Newsom said if any universities in his state sign the compact, they will lose access to state funding, including Cal Grants, a $2.8 billion student financial aid program. In an all-capital statement, Newsom, a Democrat, said California will not bankroll schools that sell out their students, professors, researchers, and surrender academic freedom. Under the compact, international enrollment would have to be capped at 15% of a college's undergraduate student body, and no more than 5% could come from a single country. All the universities invited to the compact appeared to be within the 15% threshold, though Dartmouth and USC are close at 14%, according to federal data. Many universities do not report breakdowns by individual countries. Most other U.S. universities also fall within the 15% cap, but about 120 exceed it, federal data show. Some of the most sweeping commitments are aimed at promoting conservative viewpoints. Universities would have to ensure their campuses are a vibrant marketplace of ideas where no single ideology is dominant, the compact said. They would have to evaluate views among students and faculty to ensure every department reflects a diverse mix of views. To accomplish that, it says universities must take steps, including transforming or abolishing institutional units that purposefully punish, belittle, and even spark violence against conservative ideas. It requires policies meant to counter the kind of protests that roiled U.S. campuses last year amid the Israel-Hamas war. It asks for a commitment to prevent any disruption to classes or campus libraries and to ensure demonstrators don't heckle other students. Campuses that signed the compact would have to freeze tuition for U.S. students for 5 years, and those with endowments exceeding $2 million per undergraduate could not charge tuition at all for students pursuing hard science programs.
Man dies, two minors badly hurt in Ohio crash, from the Journal Gazette. A man died and two minors were seriously injured after a crash on Ohio 18 in Defiance County, police said Thursday. Ohio State Highway Patrol officers were called to a two-vehicle crash about 2:30 p.m. on September 26 near the intersection of Ohio 18 and the Bend Road, a news release said. Gary Davis, 79, of Bryan, was driving a 2019 Ford Ranger south on the Bend Road at the intersection when he failed to yield at a stop sign, the news release said. He was then struck by a 2013 Ford Focus driven by 17-year-old Jalen Price of Defiance, who was driving east on Ohio 18. The vehicles collided and left the road. Davis was taken to ProMedica Defiance Regional Hospital with serious injuries. He died Monday, the news release said. Price and 8-year-old Hunter Runk, who was riding in the Focus, were flown to Parkview Regional Medical Center with serious injuries. The State Patrol was assisted by the Defiance County Sheriff's Office and Sherwood and Delaware Township Fire Departments. The crash remains under investigation.
The following are news briefs for Fort Wayne and Allen County. City Utilities credit rating improves. Fort Wayne City Utilities announced Thursday that its stormwater bond credit rating got a boost. In a Thursday news release, the department said Moody's Ratings, a longtime assessor of financial ratings, upgraded the stormwater bond rating to AA1 from AA2, one step shy of the highest rating, AAA. City Utilities has $17 million in stormwater projects planned. Frank Suarez, public information officer, said the department asked Moody's to look at City Utilities' financials before getting too far along on those projects. They could have left the ratings alone, he said, but they looked at our financials, saw we could afford the bonds we've asked for, and upgraded us. In December 2024, Moody's upgraded water revenue bonds to AA2 from AA3 and sewer bonds to AA3 from A1. Suarez said the rating improvement will help City Utilities save on interest payments when it takes out bonds for projects, including the Braun Drain Reconstruction, Phase 2 of the Vesey Neighborhood Stormwater Improvements, and the Spartan Drive Stormwater Improvements. City Utility officials have previously said savings create downward pressure on service rates. Part of Wilson Road closed for work. Wilson Road between Hoffman Road and Monroeville Road will have an extended road closure until about 3 p.m. Tuesday. The Allen County Highway Department said in a Thursday news release that work has begun on crossover pipe and catch basin replacements.
U.S. Navy Secretary to speak at Summit, Defense Forum in City hosted by Senator Banks. By Lisa Green of the Journal Gazette. U.S. Secretary of the Navy John C. Phelan will be in Fort Wayne next month for a summit Senator Jim Banks is hosting. The congressman announced Phelan's attendance in an email update Thursday. A full agenda and list of speakers for the 4th annual Northeast Indiana Defense Summit will be shared soon, the email said. The summit is November 11th to the 12th. It's billed as a forum in support of Indiana's leading role in our national defense. Speakers will include policymakers, industry specialists, and economic development leaders. This year's event is scheduled for about 3.5 hours at the Pearl Event Center, 228 West Main Street, on November 11th. From 8:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. on November 12th, the summit will be at Purdue University Fort Wayne in the International Ballroom. Businesses interested exhibiting this year are encouraged to email Banks staff at defensesummit@banks.senate.gov. His office did not immediately respond Thursday afternoon to share how many exhibitors are expected. The email about Phelan indicated some exhibitor booth spaces are already claimed. About 260 people, including business and government leaders from across the state, attended the third annual summit Banks hosted in September last year. At the time, Banks, a U.S. Navy veteran, was in the U.S. House of Representatives. He won election to the U.S. Senate in the November election. Sworn in March 25th, Phelan oversees the well-being, readiness, and development of nearly 1 million sailors, Marines, reservists, and civilian personnel in the Department of the Navy. The website also said he manages an annual budget of $263.5 billion and balance sheet assets totaling $922 billion. Previously, Phelan was chairman of Rugger Management, LLC, a private investment firm he founded based in Palm Beach, Florida.
Prosecutors want plea deal revoked, say inmate balks at testifying in other trial on drug death, by Devin Filchak of the Journal Gazette. Prosecutors asked Thursday to withdraw a plea agreement for a 34-year-old man accused of dealing fentanyl to an Allen County inmate who overdosed and died. Ryan L. Boggs II of Fort Wayne has been charged with dealing in a controlled substance resulting in death, dealing a narcotic drug, and two counts of possession of a narcotic drug. He pleaded guilty in January to the first two charges through a plea agreement that would limit his prison sentence to 25 years. But prosecutors filed a motion to withdraw that deal because he isn't cooperating with the related investigation, a requirement of the plea agreement. He said on a recorded jail call that he never intended to testify in the trial of 29-year-old Taylor D. Hunt, who is also charged with felonies for the inmate's death. Stephen M. Perry, Jr., 27, of Fort Wayne, died February 26, 2024. Perry had reportedly been incarcerated at the Allen County Jail for a little less than a month and was facing sentencing a couple of weeks later on charges of possession of cocaine and possession of paraphernalia. Jail surveillance video shows Boggs and Hunt going in and out of Perry's cell multiple times the day he died, according to a probable cause affidavit written by Detective Clint Hetrick. Inmates said Boggs and Hunt were dealing fentanyl and that Boggs had brought some into the jail when he was arrested less than a week before Perry's death. Boggs' intake body scan reportedly showed a mass near his groin, the affidavit said. Perry bought fentanyl from Boggs and Hunt with six bags of chips and six cups of noodles from commissary. Boggs' cellmate overdosed 2 days after Perry's death and later said he believed Boggs gave him cocaine. Police found white, powdery substances in a snack cake in his cell, and another bag was found March 5th when a nurse was changing a bandage on his leg, according to court documents. A judge is expected to schedule a jury trial for Boggs at a hearing next week, according to online court records. If convicted of all charges, he faces up to 64 years in prison. Hunt has a jury trial scheduled to begin Tuesday. He has been charged with dealing a controlled substance resulting in death and possession of a narcotic drug.
State police pilots pursue varied airborne missions, by Whitney Downard of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. Flying with the Indiana State Police isn't as simple as being a trooper and having a pilot's license. Sergeant David Plug came out of the academy with 5 years of flying experience under his belt with the U.S. Army, but he still worked on the ground for roughly a decade. When a former ISP pilot left to join the National Guard full-time, Plug, who still flies with the Army and has been with the Indiana National Guard for 24 years, was tapped to join. "I always knew I would fly for the department, just didn't know I'd be doing it this soon," Plug told the Indiana Capital Chronicle. He's now been flying with ISP for roughly 3 years. Staffing has ebbed and flowed over the decades, At one point, the aviation wing had a dozen aircraft with mechanics and over 20 pilots spread out across the state. Today, all five of the state's aircraft are based at a state trooper post in Greenwood. The central location by a cornfield right off the interstate means most ISP aircraft can reach every part of the state within an hour. Today, there are six full-time pilots, most of whom are troopers, with the exception of one retired trooper who now flies as a civilian, alongside a handful of tactical flight officers, or TFOs. Of the latter, just one is full-time, while the others are part-time, shifting from other trooper duties as needed. One trooper and one TFO are not always on call, though not every flight requires a TFO. Pluke said the TFOs are necessary when operating the aircraft's specialized camera systems, including the so-called Churchill navigation system that can pinpoint an address and keep a camera locked onto that location regardless of movement. They're responsible for that camera system, radio communications with the ground, and just performing general police duties, Pluke said. That way, the pilot can focus on flying, obstacle avoidance, and safe aircraft operation. With fewer and fewer law enforcement agencies retaining their aircraft, ISP pitches itself as a free resource available to local departments. Just one other county, Northern Indiana's Lake County, has aircraft. Other than that, it falls on us. It's our responsibility to support 91 other countries, Pluke said. The county units, the city units, the town units, if they need aircraft, they come to us. Reasons to fly. In a presentation geared toward sharing the aviation unit's resources with other law enforcement agencies, Pluke spoke about the department's overall mission to support units on the ground, no matter their law enforcement agency. Specific missions fall into general categories including search and rescue, law enforcement patrol slash support, surveillance slash situational awareness, pre-raid surveillance for warrants, aerial photography slash videography, casualty evacuation, marijuana eradication, general transportation, and disaster assessment. Bottom line, we support units on the ground, Pluke said. We don't have our own flying club, where our goal is to get 100 hours this month. From the air, aviators can tell on-the-ground officers about details invisible from their perspective, whether it's a leaking tank after a semi-accident or a suspect reaching into their pockets during a tense standoff. At large events like the Indiana State Fair or the Indy 500, a bird's-eye view can spot potential dangers to the public and monitor without interference. The presence of ISP helicopters in particular has gained a reputation in Indianapolis's street racing community, Pluke said. Aircraft now have to keep their distance until ground units are in place. As soon as they know a helicopter's in the area, they disperse and they take off. It's a showstopper, Pluge said. Some aircraft even operate lasers to guide officers with night vision goggles to specific locations. And though the cameras can capture eerily good details, Pluge said, heat sensors can sometimes pick up expressions, since lips are typically cooler than other parts of the face. There are still limitations. Hot weather disrupts heat sensors, which can be used to track fleeing suspects across miles or identify lost persons, and buildings in thick foliage can obscure camera angles. Humans still make mistakes, sometimes identifying a sleeping coyote as a potential body. Pluge estimated that roughly 80% of the aviation wing's time is devoted to crime fighting, while the remaining 20% is spent on finding someone who is lost, whether it's a hiker, an elderly person with dementia, or a child far from home. Aircraft software can even hone in on specific locations sent from trackers like Project Lifesaver, which was recently used to identify a lost child with autism. The heat sensors can find a man with dementia who lay between rows of corn just a few rows deep, far enough that it could have taken hours to find him without this technology. Some states cross-train police aviators to be paramedics, beefing up emergency responses in rural areas. There's not yet in the case in Indiana, but such efforts could be explored in the future. Of the unit's five aircraft, two are fixed-wing planes capable of holding just one to two passengers in addition to the pilot. These planes can be used to target marijuana-growing operations or traffic enforcement. Early black-and-white photos of the ISP's aviation wing show these pilots often traveling solo with a shackled prisoner transporting detainees quickly from location to location. Now, such transport is generally reserved for other purposes. Plug estimated that he'd done two transports so far this year, so rarely that I almost forgot that those even pop up. We try to facilitate the need as best we can, he said. Sometimes such requests can come with troopers are already dispatched to various parts of the state and just need to adjust time frames. But Plug said such transports have also been abandoned in favor of higher priority missions like missing persons or criminal activity. Once, Plug said, the unit transported a special prosecutor who had cases back-to-back and wouldn't have been able to meet the commitments otherwise. Another example included giving a ride to a bird flu researcher from Purdue University. More recently, Governor Mike Braun has made headlines for using ISP's helicopters to go from the governor's residence in Indianapolis to his private home in Jasper, 120 miles to the south. Staying prepared, the government's office said ISP expects pilots to fly regularly, and the state said flight hours are necessary for other reasons. Plug said that while helicopters are flown daily, weather permitting, there aren't any set hours. Rather, regular flights are necessary to maintain the aircraft and keep aviators sharp. ISP's aviation wing has three helicopters that hold between two to four passengers. The oldest dates to 1983 and has nearly 10,000 hours of flight time, while another is unadorned and used more for general transportation purposes. Depending on the conditions and models, aircraft can fly for a few hours until they need to refuel. These are additional considerations for aviators like Flug, who need to plan out those sorts of trips in advance. It's a privilege to be here, Flug said. Where else can I get paid to operate million-dollar aircrafts for? And really, I don't want to sound cliche, but to help the public? It's what I signed up for. And to put it all together, it's amazing.
We have some photos to share with you from today's newspaper. Surrounded by trees and a swing set painted green, Cameron Madison has fun with her grandmother Connie Denton at Wayndale Park Playground Thursday afternoon. Cameron is wearing black pants. A pink shirt peeks out from under her maroon and white jacket, and there is a red scrunchie in her long hair, and she also has on a pair of black gym shoes. Her grandmother, Connie, is wearing a black jacket and black pants with lavender gym shoes. She has shoulder-length blonde hair and is wearing glasses. Cameron, who is 4 years old, plays on a spinner at the park. Her grandmother is pushing her. Cameron has a smile on her face. Her long, curly hair flies behind her while she spins. Her grandmother is also smiling as she watches her granddaughter. For the third year in a row, 100 Fort Wayne Metals employees packed 100 Breasty boxes for women battling breast cancer on Thursday afternoon. And in the photo, Aaron May, Sarah Thieme, and Dory Radford stand in front of a black-topped table. Several pink bowls are on the table. The bowls are filled with items for the boxes. Each of the women hold bright pink boxes in which they are packing the items from the pink containers on the table. Each box contains the following items: socks, blankets, natural personal care products, jewelry, and handmade artwork, all selected by the Breasty Boxes team. And in the third photo is employee Amanda Wolgamott. She is writing a note of encouragement to a local breast cancer patient. All four women wear some form of pink apparel as they pack the boxes. Breasty Boxes is a local nonprofit founded by cancer survivor Erica Hyatt that began building boxes in October 2022 and has gifted 2,909 boxes and raised $538,992 for its cause. Fort Wayne Metals is the nonprofit's first corporate sponsor and the first to host a Pack the Box event on site. State officials logged $97,000 in travel expenses, data culled from previous fiscal year by Whitney Downard and Nikki Kelly of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. An Oldenburg nunnery tour, the 2025 presidential inauguration, a high school debate competition, annual industry conferences. State officials logged roughly $97,000 in state expenses for trips across Indiana and the nation, according to new reports filed Wednesday. That count includes Governor Mike Braun, his cabinet secretaries, and all statewide office holders during the 2025 fiscal year, which ran from July 1, 2024 to June 30th. Of the 19 reports reviewed by the Indiana Capital Chronicle, many officials had only been in office for part of the fiscal year. A new state law mandates reporting every October 1st on travel expenses for trips, quote, taken in an official capacity, end quote, including whether state funding was used to cover costs. The legislature passed the bill on the heels of controversy when Secretary of State Diego Morales left the country for an international trip without disclosing, who paid for his travel. He attended the National Association of Software and Service Companies Global Conference. Following pushback, Morales said he reimbursed expenses for the trip to India using personal funds. He reported another trip to Vancouver in September for a securities conference, but said no state funds were used. Morales' report didn't include a May trip to Hungary, which he repeatedly emphasized was a personal visit in various social media posts. He also said the trip was paid for by a conservative group. He documented another 19 trips out of state, including an association conference for secretaries of state in Puerto Rico. Nine of those trips were to Chicago, mostly to meet with foreign dignitaries. The San Juan trip cost $4,241 and was the most expensive claim coming out of his office's general fund. Of the nearly $33,000 Morales reported spending, roughly a third went to monthly fuel costs. The widely traveled official previously boasted about his in-state travel, saying he completed the 92-county circuit faster than other statewide office holders upon taking office. Some officials provided specific details on their travels, such as the groups they spoke to or met with. But Attorney General Todd Rokita listed only, quote, official business, end quote, for his 100 events. Lieutenant Governor Micah Beckwith generally categorized his trips as attend event or meeting and included an annual horse racing banquet. Cabinet secretaries also varied on what they shared in the reports. For example, one cabinet secretary included a secretary's retreat on June 24th at the Indiana State Museum, but not every one of her counterparts did the same. Some included total spending, while others didn't. State Comptroller Elise Nyshala spent the second most on travel, almost $12,000 on 71 trips. Most of them were to meet with county auditors all around Indiana. She also toured a local homeless shelter, served as a panelist or speaker at various events, and visited former Governor Eric Holcomb. Her most expensive single trip cost about $1,500 to attend the National Association of State Auditors, Comptrollers, and Treasurers annual conference in North Carolina. She also went to Ohio, Orlando, Anchorage, Washington, D.C., and Denver. State Treasurer Dan Elliott racked up $9,300 on more than 50 trips. His report was not specific, often citing a public event, conference, or meeting. His largest trip cost $1,470 to attend official events in Washington, D.C. for Donald Trump's presidential inauguration. Elliott also went to New York City, Orlando, and Scottsdale. Braun reported more than 144 trips for just over $7,800. Over half of that spending was at Trine University, a private school in Angola, where he was invited to give the May commencement address. Flying back from Angola to his private home in Jasper in an Indiana State Police helicopter cost $4,200, which came from ISP's Aviation Rotary Fund. For the commencement, he claimed another $19, which came from ISP's Motor and Carrier Fund. Braun also travels with a security detail provided by the Indiana State Police. The state's chief executive also claimed two ice cream expenses at Glover's in Frankfort and Rocco's in Columbus for $23 and $33, respectively. He reported visiting Washington, D.C. four times for the inauguration and meetings with federal officials, but no other out-of-state travel. Braun, a former U.S. senator, also has access to campaign accounts. Beckwith submitted $4,300, all for fuel expenses related to attending more than 100 events around Indiana. He listed five out-of-state trips, an Army event in Kentucky, and speaking events in Virginia, Georgia, Ohio, and Michigan, but none of those events included specific costs. Rokita totaled $4,650 in expenses for 100 trips, with his biggest cost being $2,237 for a Washington, D.C. visit in September 2025. He had nine out-of-state trips, including seven to the nation's capital, and others to Las Vegas and Yuma, Arizona. All eight cabinet secretaries submitted reports alongside the superintendent of Indiana State Police and adjutant general of the Indiana National Guard. The latter two categories include former appointees alongside current officials. One secretary, Mike Speedy, who oversees business affairs, didn't include any costs in his report, though his 29 total trips included the presidential inauguration and a nunnery tour with a local state lawmaker. The most widely traveled cabinet member was Secretary of Education Katie Jenner with 71 trips, followed by former Secretary of Public Safety Jennifer Ruth Green with 65 trips reported. Jenner's report covers a year of travel, while Green started in late January. Jenner extensively logged her statewide travel, including several Indianapolis-area speaking engagements, alongside dozens of school site visits across the state. Of the $7,198 she reported in travel expenses, $1,872 was devoted to monthly fuel card transactions. Her two most expensive trips to Austin, Texas and San Diego cost $1,377 and $1,457, respectively, where she spoke in an official capacity at national conferences. Another notable trip was Secretary of Commerce David Adams' Montreal visit for $1,288, which he categorized as a business attraction meeting for Bombardier based in Montreal. Bombardier is a Canadian aerospace manufacturer. Those funds came from the Indiana Economic Development Foundation's purse, not state funds. Private businesses donate to the OPAIC account, which Braun has vowed to close.
Berkshire buying chemical division from the Associated Press. Dateline Omaha, Nebraska. Berkshire Hathaway is buying Occidental Petroleum's chemical division for $9.7 billion in what may be the last big acquisition involving the consummate dealmaker, Warren Buffett. Buffett wasn't mentioned anywhere in materials released by Berkshire Hathaway discussing the deal Thursday, potentially signaling a passing of the torch to Vice Chair Greg Abel, to whom Buffett will hand the CEO title in January. But given the relationship that Buffett has with Occidental CEO Vicki Hollub, whom he has praised ever since helping her with an acquisition back in 2019, and the fact that he likes to be involved anytime Berkshire spends more than $1 billion, he certainly had a role. Even after the transition, Buffett will remain chairman at Berkshire and will still be involved in deciding how to spend the conglomerate's more than $344 billion of cash. Berkshire's cash reserves have been growing for years because Buffett has been unable to find any major acquisitions at attractive prices since completing the $11.6 billion acquisition of Allegheny Insurance in 2022. Prices for big acquisitions have been driven higher in more recent years by the entry of more hedge funds in the market. The OxyChem deal is sizable, but still uses less than 3% of Berkshire's cash and likely isn't big enough to make a significant difference in the conglomerate's bottom line. Investors seem underwhelmed with the deal, with Berkshire's shares trading down slightly and Occidental shares dropping more than 7% Thursday after it was announced.
OpenAI may be most valuable startup in world at $500 billion from the Associated Press. OpenAI could now be the world's most valuable startup ahead of Elon Musk's SpaceX and TikTok parent company ByteDance after a secondary stock sale designed to retain employees at the ChatGPT maker. Current and former OpenAI employees sold $6.6 billion in shares to a group of investors, pushing the privately held artificial intelligence company's valuation to $500 billion, according to a source with knowledge of the deal. The valuation reflects high expectations for the future of AI technology and continues OpenAI's remarkable trajectory from its start as a nonprofit research lab in 2015. Average long-term mortgage rate up again. The average rate on a 30-year U.S. mortgage ticked up for the second straight week following a string of declines that had brought down home borrowing costs to the lowest level in nearly a year. The average long-term mortgage rate rose this week to a 6.34% from 6.3% last week, mortgage buyer Freddie Mac said. A year ago, the rate averaged 6.12%. That concludes the news from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette for Friday, October 3rd. We will now take a short break and return with obituaries and features from the Weekender section.